Grow CFO is where finance leaders grow together. Join thousands of like-minded professionals using Grow CFO to access the combined knowledge and experience of the finance leader community. You can join us today, growcfo.net. Hello and welcome to the Grow CFO show. So today I've got Chris Treadwell with me. Chris has been a great friend of Grow CFO right from the early days. But Chris, unless folk have been along to one of the future finance sessions that we do in Grow CFO, they possibly don't know you. So tell the podcast audience who you are.
Absolutely. I think this is my third podcast now with you, my hat trick, as it were, over the years. But as you rightly say, I've been involved since the very beginning, almost over 4 years now, I think it is. So it's been a great journey. Ultimately, within the community, I've been supporting an area that we refer to as the future of the finance function. So it's a combination of blogs, articles, but more importantly, I suppose, the webinars that we've run over the last several years across a whole wide range of topics that link to where is finance going? A lot of it related to technology, but still over time, as you well know, because you've been involved in many yourself, that we've talked a lot about sort of process and people that all combine to be how you're going to go forward with processes. But despite my involvement in Grow CFO, I do have a day job as well. Yes.
I think, Chris, just before we go in and say what the day job is, it's worth saying that we're at the point now that I think technology and the finance function changing faster than I've known it for a long time, AI and automation. And we've got a summit coming up, haven't we?
Absolutely. And perfectly timed, I think, as you say. Certainly, there's been a lot around AI in the last 12 months or so since the launch of initially ChatGPT that everybody's been playing around with in various different ways. Then, of course, Copilot that got announced earlier on this year that I know we've done some sessions on, which is specifically relevant to the finance community. But equally, AI will more and more be involved in finance software in the years ahead as people start to better understand where its power can be used. Because I think to some degree, it's in the eye of the beholder. It's
probably 18 months now is using things before ChatGPT came along. But I think every day of the week, I do something with AI, and hardly a week seems to go by without finding an app that I'm already using that's just managed to embed some AI, or a new app being offered to me that gives an AI replacement for something I've been doing. And effectively, I think it's becoming a bit of a minefield to find your way through. AI seems to be everywhere, and I think the summit coming up will really help us unpick that. And Chris, you're giving the keynote to that summit.
Yeah, that's right. Akilla, the business that I work for on a day-to-day basis, kindly been invited to be platinum sponsor of the event. So we're delighted to be involved once again with the first summit. I believe the ambition is to continue to do these through the years ahead. So this being the first one and the keynote, you know, touching on what you guys have been doing at Grow CFO, which is a survey amongst the community around best practice across processes across the whole finance function. I think within my day job, I forever finding people who have really extreme differences on how long it takes them to conduct various processes across their department. And as we all know, and what we talk about regularly within those webinars that we've referred to moments ago, in that every single finance leader out there is ultimately trying to reduce the amount of administrative time they're spending doing all of their transactional activity so they can focus time on the data that they have from their systems and be that business partner, be that advisor to the leadership team. And I think this survey that has been put out there that we're analyzing the results of, and it's going to be really fascinating, I think, is going to give people an opportunity to almost benchmark themselves against what the else is going on in the industry. Because I think it's very easy to find what the average time it takes various processes to be completed, but that's very much the average rather than the best possible way it can be done. And that can be very far detached from what is possible. And I think it will be a really great insight to the community to be able to say, put themselves almost on a timeline. Since it currently takes me 2 weeks to do this process, the average is 1 week. But actually, best practice is in half a day, for argument's sake, and be that be the ambition for them, rather than to just to remove a couple of days out of those processes, because there's so much time spent within the finance function, as we all know, doing those transactional activities.
Absolutely. Chris, I'd love to come back to that in a few minutes. You mentioned your day job.
Yes.
What exactly do you do? Tell me about Aquila and what you do in Aquila.
Certainly. So I'm now part of the senior leadership team with Inside Aquila. I've been with the business for 5 years, albeit Aquila's been around since the mid-noughties. 2006 was when we founded. And when we founded, we were the first cloud-native finance software solution for mid-market enterprises, mid-to-enterprise organizations, and have grown over that time to support that area of business. Back then, cloud wasn't even a turn of phrase. It was, let's build something online. But our co-founders had been involved in that sector for many years prior to founding Aquila. And in the late 90s, was seeing that vision. The internet was starting to become more powerful and was a big change back then for everybody. And they saw that vision. A lot of other software was starting to go online. So they decided it's time for us to go and capture that market. And so I think back then they had a lot of time trying to convince and explain to finance leaders actually what the cloud was or what online meant. There was a lot of fear back then, but now it's commonplace, right? Everybody's wanting it.
And I remember back in the day when I stepped away from big corporate and started my own business, I was looking around at what accounting system I should use. Mm-hmm. Now, Aquila isn't in the bracket of the size business that I was running personally, but I was looking at Xero and QuickBooks. And being a Geordie up in the Northeast, I was looking at Sage and thinking, oh, well, really, I know all about Sage. I've spoken to the founder. I've been with him in local Institute of Chartered Accountants meetings in Newcastle. I really want to buy Sage. And I started looking and discovered this isn't really in the cloud. This is pretty dated compared to other stuff, along with Xero. But you said sort of mid-market businesses is your target. So I'm guessing that you should be one, that Aquila should be one of the software solutions that you're looking at when the likes of Xero are creaking at the seams for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And Xero is a great example of an equally similar cloud-native accounting system. But we typically position that as, well, those entry-level bookkeeping systems, they're very good for that space. But as you rightly say, it eventually gets to the point with a growing business that the functionality starts to be limited in what they can do to go multinational, bigger volumes of transactions. They might want to be doing consolidative reporting with multiple entities and multiple currencies and the complexities that come with all of that. So whilst they're great products, that there becomes a time for growing businesses that they come to the end of life. Often people put a lot of bolt-ons, a lot of third-party pieces of software that are equally good. But after a while, the more and more third-party pieces of software that you've got running your finance system rather than your core finance system, then probably time to start making a change. So yes, we migrate people away from those entry-level systems into that mid-market, help them grow then on their ambition to whatever shape or form that might be, whether it be more entities, whether it be going around the world, better reporting. And really the big trigger for me is when you're bringing a finance team in-house rather than having external support through an accountant practice is typically when you're probably taking the finance function more seriously. The board want better understanding of numbers. You're maybe going for funding. All of these sort of triggers tend to suggest you're now ready for a larger system with more sophistication and flexibility.
And that makes total sense to me because I think of Xero's sales team. They're not interested in selling to individual businesses. They're interested in selling to practices of bookkeepers and accountants who will use a common solution across a portfolio of 50, 100 clients. And it's great for them because it's done the same way in every client. And you could potentially implement common charts of accounts, have the settings the same way unless there's a good reason, and really have your accounting practice staff working quite efficiently.
Absolutely. It's a great product and it's been very successful in recent year. And I think in that space, similarly to in our space, they had so much success because they were cloud native. They were built using modern principles, whereas a lot of the products that existed on the market to that point were legacy products that originated on premise and therefore struggle to innovate, struggle to manage the evolution of technology. And so whilst many of them have maintained and are still available in the market today, maybe are available via a browser now, the old underlying architecture is still fundamentally the same as it was 20, 30 years ago. And that's very common in within our space as well, within the mid-market. You think of a lot of really big brands, their products have been around for 20, 30 years, and they were brilliant products when they were first launched. But it's a different world now, and the underlying architecture hasn't evolved. So it's a really interesting conversation when we're speaking to prospects as to really understanding what modern really looks like. It's not just because it's got a nice, shiny interface. It's got some real fundamentals under the hood that need to be recognized.
Kind of brings us back, Chris, to the stuff that we're talking about around in the summit, the AI and automation in finance. If you've got a product that is fundamentally 20 years old, how is that going to place you when it comes to implementing all of these new things that are on the scene? In practice, Chris, where have you seen your potential clients hitting against problems?
Absolutely. Well, if you think about it in basic terms, AI wasn't a thing 10 years ago, let alone 30 years ago when some of these products were being built. It wasn't even imagined by people back then. So they weren't even thinking about the internet back then. So the structure of their architecture isn't ready to support it. And I don't doubt for a second that they will find ways to work around it over time. But they're trying to make products that aren't suited to work in their on their architecture. And so they're going to have limitations. They're going to be slower to work. They might not work in the same way, the most efficient way. And I'm sure they'll put some smoke and mirrors around it to convince people that actually it does the same thing. But I think that's where it's really important to understand and where this best practice survey will showcase that actually, whilst you might be using some of these tools in a way, you're not maybe using them in the most efficient way possible because the products that you've got that are underpinning it can't actually support it in their best, most efficient way going forward. And these products are typically slower to develop ways to adopt these new innovations. So they'll be slower to market. They won't quite work in the same efficient way. And so customers are finding that whilst they brought in all of these great new pieces of technology, they don't still quite deliver the efficiencies and time benefits that they hoped that they would.
Yeah.
I think big examples at the moment, I've got one, a customer that I'm speaking to at the moment, where it currently takes them, and I know this won't be uncommon to your listeners, is it takes them currently the best part of 3 weeks to close their month end. And they'd like to get that down to a week, 6, 7, 8 days. Well, that's certainly an efficiency. Of course it is. Saves a bunch of time. But when some people we know are being able to do that in a morning, almost instantly, shouldn't that be the ambition? Rather, if you're making a finance change? But I think the reality is a lot of people don't realize that's possible because most of the products on the market, their limit is to be able to do it within a week because it doesn't have modern architecture. And yes, that's better than 3 weeks, but it's not as good as it could be or it should be with really modern software. And I think finance leaders need to think outside of what they've known finance software to do and think about what they would accept as software in their personal life. If we were to use software that wasn't instant and real time and immediate, you would not use it anymore in your personal life. So why do you accept it in your working world? There is software out there that is modern and can deliver the same way as the software you experience in your personal life.
And I giggle in some ways, Chris, at this, because back in the noughties, I was working for PwC Consulting in the AI analytics practice. And in finance and AI analytics, we had two big areas. There was planning, budgeting, and forecasting, which is what we'd call FP&A today, and faster close. Mm-hmm. And we were constantly talking to customers about moving their month end, or in particular the year end then, because one of the drivers was how quickly could you report your results to the city. And we cited all the time back then, 20 years ago, we cited Cisco Systems, who were already doing a virtual close. They were closing on day zero every month. And I just know now that there's still very few organizations can manage that. We ran in Grow CFO probably about 12 months ago, we were at the time running a quick polls every week. And I put a poll out that just asked the community, on what day do you close? How many days does it take you? And I thought I'd get a nice normal distribution. And it would be, and a lot of people would be very short. Well, actually, very few people were closing in the first 2 or 3 days. And I found that there was the peak in the distribution was working day 5. But then what shocked me is I didn't have a single normal distribution in my results. I actually had 2, because I then had it drop down, as you'd expect, the normal distribution too, for days 6, 7, and 8. And then suddenly I had another peak at day 10. So what's going on here? There's a whole bunch of people that are doing day 5, clearly could be doing day 0. There's another bunch of folk that are doing day 10, doing day 5. It's a huge, huge scope to make things better.
Absolutely. And I think given that finance leaders have likely worked in several businesses and so accept that is how everybody does it and the expectation, and that there can't be better out there. Otherwise, somebody would have found it. You know, the world is moving on. And indeed, within Aquila, we're talking at the moment, we reference back to AI, is why can't we be able to just say, hey, Alexa, or hey, Aquila, run the month-end close, and it's done. You don't touch it. That should be possible. This is what we're talking about with AI now. Now, we can't do that quite yet, but that's our ambition. That's what we're looking at from a longer term development perspective, is that transactional work should be zero touch. It should be automated. That's where we're going to in this world. And so the software that you are looking at now and thinking of acquiring or thinking of supporting your business, I'm not suggesting it needs to be able to do that, because I don't believe that exists yet, but it needs to be going on that sort of journey and be taking you on there. So when that is available, that you can leverage it straight away. And I don't think it's going to be as far away as people might imagine it would be, because we think of the advancements in this space in the last 12 to 18 months has been so rapid, but these things should be possible.
And my experience in looking at this on projects in practice, Chris, has been, you know, you put the process up on the wall on a big piece of brown paper, you draw the process out, you get the finance team to identify the bottlenecks, and you'll get a couple of classic things coming up. Either A, oh, we're waiting for information, or B, we're reconciling things to get rid of the errors. So you probably are in a process improvement exercise, but one of the big things for me now with AI is the way that it can look at data patterns. It can spot potentials where there are things going wrong, probably such that you can be correcting all the errors as they're going on during the month. You might even get to the point that AI is almost correcting them for you. It's machine learning. It's seeing the thing that's gone wrong for the last 6 months. It's spotting it and saying, it might just ask you the question, says, hey, do you want me to correct this?
And I think there's still a little bit of a fear around finance that AI is going to take our jobs. It's not the way to be looking at these things. No one went through their accountancy courses to learn how to put a sales invoice into a system and do the corrections on a trial balance. You went there to learn how to interpret numbers and add insight to the business. So why don't we give you now back the time to do that? Repurpose your resources so you can actually do what you've been skilled and trained to do.
Chris, this is nothing new. In consultancy proposals, again, back in the noughties, putting diagrams that drew the finance function out as a triangle, looked at the top of the triangle was the decision support. Mm-hmm. The bottom of the triangle, where it widens out and all the effort goes into, is transaction processing, and showing then an arrow leading to an inverted triangle that suggested the wide bit of the triangle that was now at the top was your decision support. Mm-hmm. The thing at the bottom was your transaction processing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still drawing the same triangle. I believe AI and automation are the things that are actually going to be the game changer to finally make that happen.
But I think to go back to that point, you're absolutely right in that we've been talking about this for so many years. I think where the software market has largely let down the finance world is that the bigger players that have the lion's share of the market aren't the innovators. They're not the ones that can provide this. People still buy that software because there's great brands behind them and they've got a really strong global structure. But when we unpick these, many of them, their technology hasn't evolved and they're not pushing these innovations because they can't deliver them. So they're not promoting them. They're not telling the world that this is what you should be looking at. because it's stamping on their own foot because they can't actually deliver it themselves. So they just smoke and mirrors.
Look at the way the software industry has developed. Certainly over all of the time that I've been involved with it, a company called Microsoft came along that had a great operating system and suddenly had a word processor. But all of us were using Lotus 1-2-3 as the spreadsheet. Nobody's heard of that. Microsoft go and acquire somebody to get Excel, acquire somebody to get PowerPoint, acquire somebody to get all the other things. All of these technologies seem to grow from small companies that can do it and eventually get taken over by the big boys. I think we're right in that space at the moment with AI and automation, but it is going to be the small companies that come up with it.
Well, the reality is you can't rebuild, you can't tweak an on-premise system to be a cloud-based system. You have to build it from the ground up. And that takes an awful lot of time, an awful lot of resource, an awful lot of cost. So acquiring businesses often is, as you say, the easier option and rebranding it. And we are seeing that a fair bit around the industry. And I think it will continue to happen because those legacy systems only have a shelf life so long, I believe.
Yeah. So thinking about kind of pillar there as the central finance system, integrating to an awful lot of other systems around it. What are you seeing as the kind of biggest changes in those things that are pushing data at Aquila?
With inside Aquila, we have our own advanced reporting capabilities within it. I think that businesses in general are looking far more at data across the whole piece, not just finance information. They're looking at information from other systems around the business, starting more and more to look at third-party information, benchmarking information. They're ultimately looking for their competitive advantage. But I think there is an awful lot of data that is now available at your fingertips. And I think the important things to think about are firstly, the accuracy and how quickly can I get access to that data? Because again, one of the processes we well know, worst case scenario, I spoke to somebody last year, it takes them 3.5 weeks to pull all of the information that they need to actually interpret their information. Well, if it's taking you 3 weeks to close your month end and then 3.5 weeks to pull the information to make the decisions you're making, 6 weeks, 2 months old, are the data that you're making your strategic decisions on. So the first thing you should be thinking about is why aren't I able to get real-time information? And when I'm saying real-time, right now, it's accurate information. It's not waiting until I've reconciled everything. It's not waiting until month end. It's not waiting until I've closed month end. It's what real-time information should mean exactly that. And again, there's some miscommunication, I believe, around the markets to what that looks like. But then once you've got that real-time access, it's really being quite succinct in what you want to know rather than drowning people. We've got all this data. Let's give you tons of reports. Well, but are you reading? I know you've got an anecdote of going in and doing some consultancy work on a business where the people didn't even know why they had the reports because they never read them.
Exactly. I must admit, I found myself laughing yet again on LinkedIn yesterday, where somebody had put one of these great big graphics out. In fact, it was a playbook of graphics, and it covered about 1,000 KPIs. My immediate thought whenever I see something like this is, 1,000 KPIs? No. Don't give me a playbook that looks like that. Give me a methodology that shows me how to get to the fives that I actually need to use to run the business.
Absolutely. And they should be actionable. If you're not going to do anything with the information that you've just seen, you don't need it. What does it mean? What are you going to action off the back of knowing said information? And if you're going to do something, then you need to know it. If you're not going to do anything and just go, oh, that was interesting, it's a waste of time.
But I think back again, Chris, to my days in PwC and that our analytics practice. I know we were building in the FP&A part of that practice, we were building balanced scorecards. So we had a methodology that worked out what should be on the scorecard. You come up with a dozen measures or so. And back then, always the problem was, okay, we've worked out what we need to measure. Now, where on earth are we going to find the data? Thing is, now you need the same methodology because it's, oh, we've got all of this data. Which 12 measures should we be getting out of that data and how do we do it?
And what's the single source of truth? Because some of this information, the same information in a sense could be coming from different systems, but telling you a different story. And that's an important piece to understand as well.
That has me smiling as well, Chris. That's another one in my past life was London 2012, the Olympics. I was in charge of the performance management team around the construction of the games. And single source of the truth was the biggest problem because, you know, we had the International Olympic Committee promised a load of things to them. We had to report back on what was happening. Ken Livingstone was the mayor of London at the time. It promised a load of stuff to London on top of what had been promised to the Olympic Committee. How do we show Ken that we were doing what he wanted to do? Then we had the actually government department, and it wasn't unusual for somebody from the department responsible for the games sitting at somebody else's desk within the Olympic delivery organization, finding out answers to questions. The local councillors, we had needs to create jobs in various boroughs, and being in London, the London Press, the Evening Standard and so on, always wanted to report something about the games. How do you stop everybody giving data and giving effectively 10 different versions? So actually my whole life at the Olympics was about how do we put together a single version of the truth? So I used to regularly smile going back from the office, picking up a copy of the Evening Standard and saying, at the time, one of the scandals going around was the number of Polish workers working in the Olympic Park when we'd promised all these jobs to effectively local people. So if anything like that was on the Evening Standard, I'd look at it and say, yeah, my performance management system produced them the data to write that headline. Yeah.
And I think the other important part around all of that, as people move more towards real-time information, which without going off on a whole different rant and conversation around the unified ledger and how that really is the only way, having a system that's on a unified ledger rather than the modular ledger system will enable real-time data. But if people are able to self-serve reports and they're able to get that information in real time whenever they want it without finance leader needing to check whether it's in balance or the corrections have all been made and et cetera. If you're really trusting that data, there will need to become really good context around what that data is saying, because the consumer of that information needs to understand, for example, if it's a sales invoice that's come into the system, what does a sale mean? Is it because we've closed the sale in the CRM? Is it because we've raised the invoice? Is it because the invoice has been paid? What stage are we classifying a sale? And those sort of context around these reports, because I think sometimes these reports come, no, this is our sales report. Yeah, but
and further,
what does that mean?
You all have a leadership team meeting where you've put the monthly accounts up on the screen, talk through the business results, and then the sales team have followed you in the next presentation. They put a sales number up on the screen, and it's been a slightly different number. It's been in the same ballpark. But rather than the conversation in the meeting going to, oh, that's moved up by 10% on last month or down by 10%, they see that it's £3.65 different to the number in the accounts. And the entire debate then becomes, why are you showing a different sales number to the finance?
Absolutely. That single source of the truth and the context around it is really important, I think, and more so going forward. But hopefully, as people get to this case where they can immediately run a report and immediately start analysing the report, they're able to spend more time in articulating it properly and using these other tools like Copilot, etc., to help prompt further thought to delve into. And the future is really exciting, I think, for people who love getting stuck into numbers and analysing them, because this sky's the limit to some degree at this stage. But it will require that fundamental architecture to be supportive of those tools to be able to use them in the most efficient way.
Yeah. So, Chris, this summit looks as though it's going to be really exciting.
Yep.
Looking forward to your keynote, looking forward to hearing from all of the experts that we're bringing in various sessions. If you haven't booked your place on the summit yet, there'll be a link to it in the show notes or on any of the posts about this podcast that we're putting out on LinkedIn and so on. But, Chris, we've talked about you and who you are, and we've talked about Aquila, but what is your role in the Grow CFO community? Because you're the only one of us that isn't actually a finance professional.
There is that. And I think that's largely why I was asked to be involved, because you guys know all of that stuff. What can I bring to the table? There's such a wealth of knowledge throughout the community around finance. And you guys can share that information amongst yourselves far better than bringing in another person who claims to know something different. But I think in the early days, at least, Dan felt, whilst he had that area of the information that he wanted to share with the community locked in, that there were a couple of areas that he felt that, whilst really relevant to finance leaders, such as technology and the people element as well, is that needed some extra support. So invited me to get involved, and I was delighted to do so. It's such a great community because I think by nature of being part of a community, everyone's really open-minded and really wants to learn. So you're not beating your head up against a brick wall for people who've done things the same way for 30 years and have no ambition to ever change or listen to what modern looks like. People, by inherently being a member, want to know what's new, what's out there, what can I use to be better at what I do and help my business further. So I love the community because of that.
I think you being in a business development space,
yes,
gives you an insight into what's going on in the market, what's new. And I know Akilah's not the only organization you've worked for. So you've got a fantastic black book of contacts, which has certainly been really useful when we've been arranging these regular future finance sessions. And we've decided, oh, we need to talk about expense automation, says Kevin. Chris says, oh, I know somebody who does that.
Yes. And I think there's an awful lot of really good things going on out there. I would argue often not with the bigger brand, often with the challengers, as we might refer to them, as the disruptors, those that often sometimes have come out of industry, they've come out of the finance world because they're so frustrated with a particular process. I must be able to team up with a developer to be able to fix this problem because it's so frustrating and it wastes so much time. And I know so many else other people within industry are going to be experiencing that same thing. So there is a market there. And so there's a lot of really interesting products coming into the market. And I see my role within the community to give those people a voice, be able to demystify a lot of the cloud around what is modern and what's not, so that when people, finance leaders have no, unless it's a passion of theirs, there's no reason that they should spend half their life really understanding exactly what all of the different technology options out there on the market. But I want to give them enough knowledge that they're going into communications with various suppliers, asking the right questions, knowing what they should expect, rather than going in just asking the supplier what they do and can they fix their problem. Because the primary example of that is that the example I made earlier on, where if somebody's got a 3-week close period and they're going out to market saying, can you fix this? And someone goes, yes, I can get it down to 10 days. Well, that's a good option for them. But with the right knowledge, they go, well, that's not good enough. I want better than that. I know better than that is out there, and they're asking the right questions. So that's where I see my role, and hopefully I've been helpful along the way to some.
Certainly you've been useful in telling us about all the smoke and mirrors that still goes on with these older systems and cloud accounting.
Yeah, it does a lot. I could rant on about that for an awful long time, I'm sure.
But before we go down that debate again, Chris, that actually might be a good place to bring the discussion to a halt. So we've got the Finance Summit coming up, Chris. It's going to be the 15th and 16th of May.
Yes, look forward to it.
So, timings?
Timings, purposefully so, I believe, in the UK time zone at least, it's going to be late afternoon into the evening so that we can support those around the wider world. It's such a thriving community now, not just in the UK, but a lot of American, South American, even Australasia members now. So hopefully that time space will be able to give everybody an opportunity to be involved.
Six sessions each day,
yeah,
around midday UK time, and you're in the very, very first session giving your keynote.
That's right. I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully, actually, a lot of what we've talked about today, there'll be further context to that within that session where people will actually be able to take away some. We're going to create a report around this survey so that people can really understand across all the processes amongst their finance function. What is achievable? What should I be striving towards? With no ambition, you're not going to be able to fix them all overnight, but at least know what utopia looks like.
Our first session's going to set the vision, Chris. Really looking forward to that. So, Chris, thank you for being this week's guest on the Grow CFO Show.
Delighted to be involved again, Kevin. I'll speak to you again soon.